ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 10 चैप्टर 8 एंटाइटल लॉर्ड कृष्णा से शोज द यूनिवर्सल फॉर्म टेक्स्ट 11।
श्री शुक उवाच एवं संप्रार्थितो विप्र स्वचकीर्सिताम् एव तत् चकार नाम कारणम् गुडो रहसि बालयो।
ट्रांसलेशन। शुकदेव गोस्वामी कंटिन्यूड, हैविंग दस बीन एस्पेशली रिक्वेस्टेड बाय नंद महाराज टू डू दैट विच ही हैड ऑलरेडी डिसाइड टू डू, Gargamuni performed the name-giving ceremony for Krishna and Balaram in a solitary place. This text has no purport. We'll continue reading. Text 12.
Shri Garga Uvacha Ayam hi Rohini Putro Ramayan Surdo Gunai Akhya Akhyas Yate Rama Iti Baladhikyad Balam Vidhu Yadunam Apratag Bhavat Sankarshanam Ushanti Api.
Translation. Gargamuni said, this child, the son of Rohini, will give all happiness to his relatives and friends by his transcendental qualities. Therefore, he will be known as Rama. And because he will manifest extraordinary bodily strength, he will also be known as Bala. Moreover, because he unites two families, Vasudeva's family and the family of Nanda Maharaj, he will be known as Sankarshan. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Purport. Baladev was actually the son of Devaki, but he was transferred from Devaki's womb to that of Rohini. This fact was not disclosed. According to a statement in the Harivamsa, Pratyuvachato Rama Sarvam Stan Abhitha Stitan Yadaveshi Yadavesva api sarveshu bhavanto mama vallabha. Gargamuni did disclose to Nanda Maharaj that Balaram would be known as Sankarshan because of uniting two families, the Yadu Vamsha and the Vamsha of Nanda Maharaj, one of which was known as Kshatriya and the other as Vaishya. Both the families had the same original forefather, the only difference being that Nanda Maharaj was born of a Vaishya wife, whereas Vasudev was born of a Kshatriya wife. Later, Nanda Maharaj married a Vaishya wife and Vasudev married a Kshatriya wife. So although the families of Nanda Maharaj and Vasudev both came from the same father, they were divided as Kshatriyas and Vaishyas. Now, Baladev united them. Therefore, he was known as Sankarshan. These two verses which we're reading today are signifying a very powerful connection and a very powerful theme, which is about uniting people. Before I actually begin speaking, I would like to take blessings from all the devotees, especially all the senior devotees assembled here. I can speak something from the Srimad Bhagavatam for my purification. Here, Balaramji is just born and Gargamuni and Srila Prabhupada in his purports also and Shukadeva Goswami are highlighting one aspect of Balaramji, which is the aspect of how Balaramji is actually uniting people. The Vedic culture is a culture of uniting. The Western culture is a culture of division. If you study from all the scriptures, specifically from Srimad Bhagavatam, the Ramayana, many of the scriptures, you'll always find that people who are of a certain culture and of a certain background, they generally prefer to unite people, unite, you know, different aspects. And people of a certain background are, you know, very contented in, you know, separating people. The modern culture is a culture of separating.
keeping everyone, you know, in his own place. Don't bring people together. Therefore, in the Western world, especially, you'll find that two people living together is tough. Two families staying together is tough. Companies which grow, they grow on selfish interests of each individual, not on a united collection. But if you see in India, even though it's getting westernized day by day, but the culture of staying together is very strong even now. Traditional families, you know, you can take the Tatas or the Mofatlas, so many other families. The whole culture of the family is to keep people together, whether it be just families or it be, you know, employees. So when the culture is strong of people keeping people together, that culture can thrive, that culture can grow. And the culture where the prime requirement is of self-satisfaction, that culture will eventually promote degradation. And if you study here, Balramji, the whole purpose for which he was born, you know, here Gargamuni is, you know, very clearly bringing out a very unique quality of Balramji, is uniting families. Vasudeva's family and Nanda Maharaj's family, bringing them together. And very interestingly, intelligence has to be used in the right perspective. If intelligence is not used in the right way, the intelligence can actually create a lot of violence. And here, Gargamuni is very intelligently analyzing how, you know, Balramji is actually uniting families. And he's presenting that factor to Nanda Maharaj so that whenever he looks at this child, he look at this child as a child who is uniting people together. One time, there was a, you know, Bhagavad speaker who was speaking about how the dog's tail has no use at all, you know. And he was saying that the dog's tail, you know, it doesn't cover the back part. It stands up. And it doesn't even help to, you know, drive flies away. You know, cow's tail, it can drive flies away. The dog's tail is not even useful for that. So he's saying the dog's tail is practically useless in this world. So, you know, he was giving an example. He was using this as an example, saying that, you know, people who do not use their intelligence for the right purpose, their intelligence is like dog's tail only. So one man in the audience, he got up and he said, "I have a question." So the speaker asked him, "What question do you have?" He said that in God's creation, there is nothing that is useless. Now, how can you say that dog's tail is useless? You should take back your statement. The speaker, he said, "Yes, devotees are intelligent." Now, so he said that the dog's tail is useful. It's not that it's useless. It is useful to give this example that if you don't use your intelligence, your intelligence is like a dog's tail. So the point is that, you know, many people, they use this, you know, concept of how different, you know, elements, you know, without being utilized, it is useless. So in one sense, in this verse, you know, when the birth of Balramji is coming, Gargamuni is actually using his intelligence to see how Balramji is a child who is actually uniting families. So when intelligence is used in the spirit to create unity, in the spirit to create culture, which is important and which is upward, then that intelligence is very useful. But if intelligence is used to create a culture which is downwards, that intelligence can be really bad. Today also happens to be Hanuman Jayanti, where in Hanumanji represents what Balram represents. Balram represents the Guru Tattva, uniting. The Guru is supposed to unite the disciple with the teacher. So the whole focus of Balramji was how all the devotees can be connected to Krishna very powerfully. That was the purpose of Balramji. So among his friends, you know, when Balramji and Krishna were with his cowherd friends, though Balramji is the elder brother of Krishna, but Balramji always kept himself in the background. And he always kept Krishna in the front and kept connecting everybody to Krishna. That is the role of teacher. That is the role of guru. The role of a spiritual master, the role of guru, is to connect the individual with God. That is his role. And very interestingly, you know, somebody was giving this example of a telescope. So in the telescope, you'll find that, you know, how is the telescope become more and more powerful? The power of the telescope increases as the number of lenses in between increase. You know, so the more number of lenses in between are there, that much you can see clearly, you know, further. So it seems from an external perspective, if I want to see something very far, but if I put many objects in between me and that object, I will not be able to see clearly. But the opposite happens. When you have a telescope, the more number of lenses are there between you and that object, the clarity of vision and the clarity of seeing that object increases. So for the in the example of the telescope, the more number between you and the object, the clarity is better. The same thing is between the teacher and God, between the disciple and God. It seems that, you know, everybody wants a direct connection, you know, in today's world. If somebody is between you and somebody else, the whole principle is stepping over, you know, I want direct connection with the boss, or I want direct connection with, you know, the spiritual master. But here we can understand that the greater number of people between us and God, that much clear our vision of God will be. So Balaramji represents that principle of being the guru, but between him and Krishna, he keeps hundreds of people so that, you know, they get more access to Krishna. That is the role of the spiritual master. And Hanumanji's life very much represents that same principle of uniting people. Hanumanji, if you study, you know, the life of Hanumanji, there are so many things that Hanumanji did which were clearly to unite people. I'll take a few examples and we'll see how, you know, even in this purport, the connection is very powerful between Hanumanji and Balaramji also. And so the first uniting factor that Hanumanji actually was involved in was in uniting Sita and Ram. Hanumanji united Sita and Ram in so many ways. That's a very interesting thing. So the first thing is through the sound vibration. When Hanumanji came to Lanka and Mother Sita was in the Ashok Vatika, you know, she was actually on the verge of committing suicide. You know, she had tied her, the braids of her hair to the tree. And she was, you know, on the verge of committing suicide. At that time, Hanumanji landed on that tree. And Sita, just imagine if Hanumanji jumped right in front of Sita. You know, generally when somebody is excited, he doesn't think of consequences. Hanumanji is excited that he has found Mother Sita. He has been searching like anything. He has been, you know, going in and out of Lanka trying to find Mother Sita. And finally, what he has come for, he has achieved. Just imagine, you are that chosen one among lakhs and lakhs and lakhs of monkeys. You are the one who has found Mother Sita. How excited you will be. Hanumanji was excited. And in his excitement, if he had jumped in front of Mother Sita, she would have, you know, hung herself very fast, because she would think, you know, Ravan has come in another disguise. Just imagine a monkey coming suddenly, you know, in front of you. So Hanumanji was sensitive not to do that mistake of jumping. So sensitiveness along with intelligence is a very powerful tool. But when sensitiveness is without intelligence, actually one becomes insensitive. So Hanumanji was sensitive, but he was very intelligent also. He didn't jump. But rather, he gave her that thing which actually united her with Ram. What did he give her? He gave her the Ramayana. From top, he was sitting there and he was narrating the Ramayana. Very interesting. In this verse, Garagamuni is using this. Shukadeva Goswami is quoting Garagamuni. And Garagamuni is saying that Ramayan Surdo Gune, which means that Ramayan means pleasing, that which is pleasing. And Suhrada means all friends and relatives. Gune means by transcendental qualities. So here he's talking about Balaramji, who is pleasing with all his transcendental qualities. He's pleasing all his friends and relatives. But the same thing when it comes to the narration of Ramayan. The quality of the Ramayan is it is pleasing. So Hanumanji, he is speaking Ramayan from top. But below, Mother Sita, who was on the verge of despair, practically on the verge of death, who commits suicide? Somebody who has no hope in life. And here, Mother Sita is going to commit suicide. At that time, she hears Ramayana. And the more she hears Ramayana, more her confidence in life increases. This is the quality of transcendental literature. It increases your confidence in living. And, you know, so in the middle of Ashok Vatika, a place which is filled with demons, a place which is filled with people who are, you know, non-believers in God,
she heard something which increased her faith and connection with Ram. So Hanumanji first represents the union of Ram and Sita through the sound vibration. So the first union which Hanumanji helped with. Then, of course, Hanumanji united Mother Ram and Sita in rasa, in transcendental mellows. When Hanumanji appeared in front of Mother Sita, Hanumanji gave her the ring. Now, Sita, the first question, you know, when a wife is separated from husband for a long time, the first question she wants to know is, how is he doing? So the first thing Sita asked is, how is Ram? How is my husband? Hanumanji, you see, again, you know, knowing rasa, he is a brahmachari who's supposed to have no understanding of, you know, conjugal mellows, of rasa tattva. But here, still, Hanumanji is expert in knowing what is rasa between Lord Ram and Mother Sita. Just imagine a wife is separated from a husband for a long time, and the wife asks somebody, how is my husband doing? If Hanumanji has said, yeah, Ram is doing really well, you know, he is like very, very happy, somebody can think like that, you know, that would make my wife happy, that would make Mother Sita happy. Hanumanji realized that will not make her happy. She wants her husband to be happy, but she wants her husband not to be happy, you know, without her. So Hanumanji realized this, and he told her, he gave the example. He said, this ring, what you're holding in your hand, is supposed to be a finger ring. But this ring actually fits in Ram's hands because Ram has become so thin, you know, thinking about you. So that answer pleased Sita very much. This shows how Hanumanji was actually uniting Mother Sita with Ram on the tattva of rasa also. And then, of course, physically, he endeavored to unite Mother Sita and Lord Ram, building a bridge, you know, 100 yojana bridge, 80 miles in width, such a huge endeavor in 5 days. And Hanumanji was one of the prominent contributors in building a bridge. So physically connecting Ram and Sita through the means of the bridge and through the means of a fight. So if you see it from the perspective of Hanumanji's personal life, you know, what is he going to get by uniting Mother Sita and Ram? You know, he is a brahmachari, he's just going to go walk away, you know, and husband and wife are united. But you see again that he is doing so much endeavor to unite a family. And on another level, you know, Hanumanji was uniting Mother Sita with Ram in confidence, in building up her confidence. How did he do it? Very interesting. Hanumanji, when he told Mother Sita, so Sita asked him, who are you? So, you know, one way of saying it is that I am Hanuman, the messenger of Lord Ram, and among lakhs and lakhs of monkeys, you know, we were trying to find you, and you know, no one had the guts to jump over the ocean. I'm the one who did it. That is one way of showing, you know, that who he is, you know, explaining who he is. But he explained who he is in a very interesting way, which increased Sita's confidence in Ram. He said that in our army of monkeys, there are thousands and lakhs of monkeys. And he said, there is not even one monkey who is less than me in strength, less than me in abilities. Each monkey is either more than me or equal to me. Now, if you see it from a realistic perspective, that was a lie. Now, there was no monkey who was equal to Hanumanji. Hanumanji is much better than everyone else. But why did Hanumanji say that? Because Hanumanji was genuinely, two things. First of all, he was genuinely feeling like that. That's the quality of a spiritual master. That's the quality of even a disciple. Genuinely feeling that I'm not capable of doing anything. I'm not capable of doing much. The others are much better than me. That is genuine humility of Hanumanji. But more than just genuine humility of Hanumanji, it was also the reason that he knew the mood of Mother Sita. So the confidence of Mother Sita will increase in Lord Ram when she knows that he is heading an army of such people who are much better than this person who came here. You know, just imagine the least among all of them came here. So what the best can do? So that increased the confidence of Mother Sita. So he united Mother Sita with Ram in that way. And then, of course, if you see it from the practical perspective, you know, another angle to Hanumanji. He is much more qualified than Sugriv in every aspect. In devotion, in strength, in intellectual capacity, in analyzing situations, judging people, in every quality he is better than Sugriva. But why is he serving Sugriva? Why is he working under Sugriva? You know, generally, you know, in this world, somebody who is better than somebody else, he never wants to work under that person. He finds some way to go above, you know, because he knows that, you know, this fellow can't handle me. I'm much better. But Hanumanji still is working under Sugriv, teaching us a very important lesson that the only reason Hanumanji is working under Sugriv is because his guru, Surya, he told him, Sugriv is my son, is a incarnation of Suryadev, and Sugriv needs help. And he needs a capable minister like you. You assist him. This is your Guru Dakshina. So Hanumanji was grateful to his teacher for teaching him whatever he knew, and gratitude manifests as action. And his gratitude to his teacher was so great that he was willing to serve under somebody who is inferior to him. That's a mood a disciple should have when it gets an instruction from a spiritual master. The ego, when it comes in between your service and your spiritual master, that ego can be the greatest barrier in your progress in spiritual life. Hanumanji, first thing, he kept his ego aside and he served under Sugriv. And, you know, it's not that at every instance he was finding faults of Sugriv. Whatever faults he found of Sugriv also, he was correcting in a very gentlemanly way. He was not correcting in a way which, you know, kind of put Sugriv down. But rather, he was encouraging Sugriv to do the right thing in the right way. So, Hanumanji was uniting Mother Sita with Ram in confidence. And of course, he was uniting Sita with Ram in words. When, you know, Hanumanji came to meet Lord Ram, he conveyed the message that, you know, found Sita I. So, he uses word found first so that, you know, Ram understands that he has found. He didn't use I first, he didn't use Sita first, but he used the word found first, which was like the golden letter for Lord Ram. And he united Ram and Sita in gifts. Ram gave a gift of the ring to Mother Sita, and Mother Sita sent the Chudamani to Lord Ram. Very interesting, you know, this is not there in the Valmiki Ramayana, but this is a folk story of how the ring played such an important role in Mother Sita's life. The ring is considered to be, you know, people understand that, you know, it's something that Lord Ram was wearing, and because Lord Ram was wearing it, it reminds her of Ram. But actually, it is explained that the ring reminded Mother Sita of Ram in a very special way. Because in the past, the ring had united Mother Sita with Ram. How was that? And this, no one knew. Only Mother Sita knew. The ring, one day, Lord Ram and Mother Sita had a fight. You know, just like any husband and wife, they had a fight. And Ram and Sita were not talking to each other for, you know, 3 days practically. And, you know, both of them wanted to talk to each other, but both of them didn't know how to start the talk. You know, you always need somebody in between to mediate. And they had no children at that time. So naturally, there was nobody to mediate also. So when Ram was, you know, Mother Sita and Ram in the same room, suddenly Mother Sita dropped the ring on the floor. And Ram ran and picked up the ring and gave it to Mother Sita. And, you know, they smiled. And that broke the whole ice, you know. So Mother Sita remembered that story. And she saw that this ring had united me with my husband long back. And the same ring is uniting me again with my husband. So that got really fond memories in Mother Sita's heart. So Hanumanji was trying to unite all these two personalities in such different ways. And, you know, for a sadhaka, Hanumanji, when he entered into into Ravan's kingdom, it's very interesting what we can understand from, you know, Hanumanji's entering into Ravan's kingdom. He practically entered into Maya's kingdom. You know, if you consider Hanumanji as a sadhaka, he entered into, you know, territory which is, you know, red alert territory for a devotee. You know, he entered into Maya's kingdom, but he entered with very conscious of his mission, focused on his mission. And along with being focused on his mission, he was very cautious of being infected. This is something that, you know, one needs to observe, that even if a devotee has to take a risk for preaching, a risk for some service, and he may have to enter into Maya's kingdom, but he should be first aware of why he is going, where he is going, and more than that, he should be aware of who he is and where he is going. When somebody is aware of these two things, conscious of the mission for which he is going and cautious of the infection that he can possibly, you know, undergo. Just like the example is given of a doctor, you know, somebody who goes into a dentist's clinic or a doctor's clinic, you'll always find the doctors are always washing their hands. You know, practically 24 hours a day, at least they would wash their hands maybe 300, 400 times, you know, depending on the number of patients they meet. It doesn't make sense. It seems they are, you know, some kind of cleanliness maniac. What they are is they are conscious of being infected. So this is how a devotee should behave when he, you know, goes into the material world, especially when he takes risk for the preaching mission. Not only the risk is needed because the mission has to go ahead, but along with the risk, there has to be a certain element of caution, a certain element of precaution, which has to be taken while taking that risk. This is signified from Hanumanji's role here. And on another level, Hanumanji and Balaramji are very similar in their roles as spiritual masters, guru. Hanumanji represents guru also, guru tattva, and Balaramji also represents guru. In the Ramayana, sometimes Lakshman is considered to be guru, sometimes Hanumanji is considered to be guru, sometimes Mother Sita is considered to be guru, depending on the story, depending on the lessons derived. And again, in the Krishna Leela also, Balaramji is constantly considered to be a guru. Very interesting, when Balaramji was marrying Revati, so Revati was very high, very tall, you know, and you know, he couldn't deal with a wife so tall. So Balaramji, he pulled her down with his plow and he made her of the right height, you know, probably a little shorter also. That signifies a very interesting fact that the role of a teacher is to correct his disciples and bring him to a right position, you know, right level, where the disciple can accept the spiritual master as somebody who is guiding him, who is showing him direction. If the disciple is high, thinking that, you know, I'm teaching my guru, then that's not a very healthy position for the disciple. So the spiritual master sometimes has to do the role of pulling down. And sometimes the spiritual master has to do the role of pulling up. That's, you know, the pastime of Kubja. Krishna was, when Kubja was bent down, Krishna pulled her up and made her straight. So Balaramji pulled Revati down and Krishna pulled Kubja up. Which shows that the role of a spiritual master is a very interesting role. According to the audience or according to the disciple's capacity, the spiritual master deals. So some disciples has to be dealt in the way Balaramji dealt with Revati, you know, bring a little lower. Some disciples have to be dealt in a way that Krishna dealt with Kubja, you know, take higher. Like Srila Prabhupada. There are many disciples of Srila Prabhupada who would, you know, come and criticize Jayananda Prabhu. You know, Jayananda Prabhu was a very intimate disciple of Srila Prabhupada. Jayananda Prabhu was, you know, serving like anything. But he had a defect that he couldn't pronounce properly Sanskrit mantras. He would fall asleep during classes, you know, not very attentive in classes. But every time a disciple brought a complaint about Jayananda Prabhu, Prabhupada would say, the Jayanand is working like 15 men. For him to sleep in the Bhagavatam class is allowed. Yeah. So now, if you know, a spiritual master giving an instruction that a disciple should sleep in the Bhagavatam class, it can be bewildering. But here, Prabhupada is in the mood of Krishna delivering Kubja, bringing her up. And sometimes Prabhupada would take the other instance, you know, where a disciple would act very, very, you know, seemingly to be humble, you know, but Prabhupada would act like very heavy, knowing the inner mood of this disciple. So one time, one disciple came to Srila Prabhupada. You know, every day Srila Prabhupada would walk into one of the temples, I don't remember which one, and this disciple, he would stand on the steps and chant Sanskrit mantras, like, you know, full speed, continuously Sanskrit mantras. So he would do it day after day after day. One day, Srila Prabhupada stopped in front of him and he told him, why don't you do something practical? That person got bewildered. He's trying to glorify Srila Prabhupada, the Prabhupada gave him instruction because he understood the mood. So sometimes the spiritual master has to pull a disciple down to the right level so that he can advance. So here, Hanumanji also is in a very similar role of being a spiritual master. And Guru has functions at different roles. And those who are preaching the message of God sometimes have to act on the role of Guru, you know, though they may not be qualified. But when we study the life of Hanumanji, especially from this story of Hanumanji entering into the Ashok Vatika, trying to, you know, give a message to Mother Sita, a lot of lessons can be derived from it. So first thing is that the spiritual master or a guru, somebody who is supposed to give a message, he is chosen by God. Lord Ram personally chose Hanumanji. He didn't choose, you know, in random. He chose based on qualification. And how did Ram judge Hanumanji? You know, with few words that Hanumanji spoke. The first meeting of Lord Ram with Hanuman, you know, when Lakshman was there, when Hanumanji started speaking, the words that Hanumanji was speaking were perfect in meter, perfect in dictum, perfect in posture. Everything was perfect. So Lord Ram was impressed. He said, if anybody can be my messenger, if anybody can be my minister, this is the person who is qualified. You know, most of the times, tough to get qualified servants, you know, because a servant, to act as a servant, requires a qualification also. It sometimes feels, you know, that hiring somebody for a certain amount of money, you know, you can get a good servant. No. Even to serve, it requires intelligence. So Hanumanji was chosen by Lord Ram first. And the second thing is, when Hanumanji traveled to Ashok Vatika, to where Mother Sita was, for what he came to give hope to Mother Sita that the Lord is coming. This is the role of a teacher, to give hope to the conditioned souls. Don't worry. Continue practicing, Krishna will come. The challenge in today's society is to keep people inspired that Krishna will come. Very tough, you know. People over a period of time, after a few years, after chanting, you know, practicing spiritual life, they get demotivated. What's happening? Nothing is happening only, you know. I'm chanting Hare Krishna for so many years, I have not seen Krishna till now, you know. Nothing seems to be happening. Here, we can learn from this aspect. The role of a teacher, the role of a spiritual master, the role of a preacher is to give hope to living entity that Krishna is coming. Hanumanji just did that. And how did he give hope to Mother Sita? Two things. First thing, he gave her the Ramayana, which is spiritual instructions. And the second thing, he gave her a gift, the ring, which represents the mantra, the holy name. So these are the two tools that the Lord used to give hope to Mother Sita. So the role of a spiritual master, the role of a teacher is to give hope to the disciple, to the student, to somebody who is interested using these two tools, the scriptures and the holy name. And then, you know, Hanumanji, very interesting the way he dealt with Mother Sita. When somebody comes to the temple for the first time, if you start becoming analytical, you know, thinking that, you know, this person, I've seen him here. He was doing all kinds of crazy things. You know, like somebody was telling me a few days back that there's one man who comes to the temple regularly, but I've seen him smoking every day outside, you know. And just before he comes into the temple, he smokes and comes. It's good to be analytical. But at the same time, we can learn from Hanumanji how he dealt with Mother Sita. Just see, at this point of time, Mother Sita had committed the biggest mistake of her life. What are the big mistakes she committed? Two things. First, she sent Ram away to find the deer. She found something more attractive than Ram. And the second thing is, she sent Guru, the spiritual master, away, you know, blaming him for something that he has not done. So it's a blunder on Mother Sita's part. So Hanumanji, the first time he met Mother Sita, he could have opened that book, you know, the whole story. Why did you do that? You know, who told you to send Ram away? You know, you should have known the principle that you should not be attracted by material things. And more than that, you should have known that Lakshman is a well-wisher. He could have chastised Sita like anything. That is one way of approaching, you know, somebody who is coming for the first time. But another way of approaching somebody who is coming for the first time is, forget his problem, forget his crime. Deal with him as he is. Deal with him seeing his suffering condition. Deal with him seeing his separation from the Lord and give him knowledge. So that's a higher level which Hanumanji did. And when the spiritual master comes into people's lives, the role of a spiritual master is to help the disciple or the student fight with, you know, all the, you know, the bombardment that comes in, you know. So Hanumanji, he was fighting against the evil forces of nature, which captures the senses and the mind of the living entities, you know. In today's world, like, you know, I've been meeting a few people, and interesting thing is that in today's world, to stay focused on God, without being attracted to what the world is offering is very tough. Very, very tough. And especially, you know, those who are staying in the temple may not realize it so much. But those who are staying outside, the kind of distractions and the kind of attractions that are coming in are unlimited. You know, Maharaj, I was traveling with Maharaj in Rishikesh. In every lecture, he was making one point. It's very interesting. He was quoting, you know, one professor from Harvard. He was quoting that how this world is filled with weapons of mass distraction. You know, that constantly weapons are created for distracting people away from God. And here is the role of a teacher to help people fight with all those weapons of mass distraction. With what? With attraction. Attraction to the holy name, attraction to the message of God. So that is the role of Hanumanji. And Hanumanji, you know, he even tried to convince Ravan. And, you know, initially to meet Ravan, he had to use his force. It is explained that Hanumanji used all means. There's a verse in the Valmiki Ramayana which actually says that Hanumanji thought of what is the best means for me to reach Ravan. One way is that I can talk to his, you know, people, try to get me an appointment with Ravan. Very difficult, because Ravan is too arrogant. He doesn't care for insignificant people. Another way is that I can bribe my way through. Ravan's palace is made up of gold. How much money you will give to bribe people? Another way is that, you know, I can make some kind of, you know, duality, bheda, you know, trying to get my way through to meet Ravan. Ravan is a dictator. When dictatorship is there, you know, these kind of bathe principles don't work so much, you know. Therefore, democracy, it can be very dangerous many times. And Ravan was a 100% dictator. Nothing in Lanka could move without his sanction. And how can he create a bathe in such a place? So Hanumanji realized the only way that can work is danda. You know, beat up people, you know. And very interesting, Hanumanji hit Ravan in the place which will hurt him the most. For somebody who is a materialist, the most difficult thing to deal with is if his objects of senses are destroyed. The thing that he loves the most, if that thing is destroyed, that person wakes up. So for Ravan, Ashok Vatika is the most beautiful place. Even now in Lanka, there is this particular place where the Ashok Vatika is located is still there. And hundreds of people flock to visit it. Of course, they don't know that it is Ashok Vatika. Most people don't know. You know, few people who are native, who actually know the place, they know it is Ashok Vatika. But it is considered to be a very attractive place from a, you know, natural perspective also. And Ravan chose that place to keep Mother Sita because he thought that, you know, attractive things may change her mind. You know, she has never found some place so attractive. This is the tendency of people who are, you know, thinking like that. And it is a valley. So he kept Mother Sita there. Hanumanji, he attacked that valley. The thing that is most dear to Ravan, he destroyed it. Immediately, Ravan's, you know, hundreds of spies were roaming trying to find Hanumanji. So he immediately got access to to Ravan. And then, you know, so this is the role of a teacher. Sometimes a teacher has to shake a person up to wake him from, you know, his illusory realities. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, he was very heavy, you know, many times. And in his heaviness, he would deal with people very heavily. Why? Just to wake people up. Sometimes he would do it to wake his disciples up. Sometimes he would do it to wake up people who are absolutely atheistic. One time, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur was walking, you know, on the streets of Navadvip. And you know, there was a very famous Mayavadi at that point of time, very powerful person. And he was walking from the front. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur is known to, you know, chastise Mayavadis very heavily, you know, very. And people who were walking with Bhaktisiddhanta, they knew that something heavy is going to happen now. The first time confronting face to face, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, when they came face to face, he literally slapped that person and walked away. So generally, you don't do that kind of activity. But sometimes a teacher has to shake a person so badly up that he gets up thinking that maybe I'm doing something wrong. That's exactly what Hanumanji did with Ravan. He just shook him up so badly that first time in his life, Ravan actually started thinking that who is this person who has created such a havoc? So there are two or three instances in the Ramayana where Ravan seriously considers surrendering Mother Sita back to Ram. And one of these instances is when Hanumanji comes and destroys the whole of Lanka.
he understands that, you know, one person who is the most insignificant person, when he deals with me, what has happened to my kingdom? And very interestingly, the way in which it is presented, that Ashokavan, the place where Mother Sita was resting, that place is supposed to be a place where there is no Shoka. So Valmiki writes that Ashokavan became Shokavan. Only misery in that place. You know, there were, you know, hundreds of demons lying with hands broken, legs broken, everything burnt up here and there. And so people are creating a civilization which is supposed to be Ashok. No misery. Material nature, under the direction of God, is going to shake up that reality and make it Shokavan. Make it a place filled with misery. It's only a matter of time. And the spiritual master's role is to wake up the person to that reality. And, you know, when Mother Sita, she, you know, all these demonesses, they were shocked that this one monkey is creating such a havoc. They caught Mother Sita, asked her, who is this person? Tell us, who is this person? Mother Sita, very interesting. How it shows Mother Sita can be very diplomatic also. Mother Sita told them that, I don't know who this person is. She said, in fact, even I'm scared of this person. You know, I don't know who this person is. So the point is she telling a lie? Is she lying? You know, she's saying, I don't know who this person is. Actually, she is in the role of a mother. The mother is very concerned for a child. And when a mother, sometimes to protect the child, has to lie, you don't take that to be a lie. And you can't say, you know, this person is dishonest. No, that's the mood of the mother. Mother will do anything to protect the child. And here, Mother Sita is feeling, you know, the mamta, the motherhood for Hanumanji, who is her own child. And she's protecting him by saying, I don't know who this is. And another very subtle reason why she said, I don't know, is that the fear of unknown is more dangerous than the fear of known. If Mother Sita said, you know, I know who this is, you know, Lord Ram's monkey, the fear is dispelled. So, you know, Mother Sita said, I don't know, that increased the fear of these demonesses. Because they felt that here is something which is so unknown, creating such a havoc. They became even more fearful. And then Hanumanji, when he met Ravan, he was very impressed with Ravan actually. And he tried to imagine Ravan serving Lord Ram. You see, what a noble thought. Even in the middle of the greatest, you know, enemy camp, Lord Hanumanji is thinking how it will feel if this person, Ravan, becomes a servant of Lord Ram. He's imagining, probably he's imagining Ravan doing some menial service to Ravan, to Lord Ram, you know, bringing some water, you know, doing something for Lord Ram. So this is the mood of a devotee. When he sees a conditioned soul, he feels that if this person only becomes a devotee of Krishna, and what he can do for Krishna, that is the mood of a devotee who is genuine. Waiting to help every individual become servant of Krishna. That's Balaramji again. Balaramji's role is somehow or the other inspire everyone to become Krishna's servant. And anyone who doesn't become Krishna's servant and is obstinate about it, Balaramji has a way to deal with them. You know, Dhenukasur. Dhenukasur was adamant not to serve Krishna. Adamant to serve Kamsa. Balaramji, he tried his best. But when this demon didn't understand Balaramji, he flung him on top of a tree. So the tree, it represents, you know, according to somebody who is a materialist, it represents great height. But from somebody who is a spiritualist, that tree, the higher you go, the stronger you fall. So when Balaramji sent Dhenukasur up, he actually didn't send him up, he sent him much lower, right? So a spiritual teacher sometimes has to deal with somebody who is arrogant, who is not ready to surrender in a very, you know, heavy way also. And so Hanumanji was very impressed with Ravan. And, you know, this is the best preaching actually. How to allow everyone to be connected to God in a very intimate way. Srila Prabhupada, he is a very unique example of, you know, how he exactly acted like Lord Balaram and like Hanumanji. As a guru, as a teacher. The role of a teacher is to connect every individual who is powerful to Krishna directly and make him a servant of Krishna and not act as an impediment in between. You know, many times, teachers who are egoistic, who don't have the real understanding of how the actual rasa or the principle of faith in God will come when people experience shelter of God directly.
and not, you know, somebody who's coming in between. Srila Prabhupada demonstrated it. When George Harrison was becoming a devotee, he wanted to become a monk in the temple. He wanted to become a disciple of Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada told him, you're already initiated. Your name is Harrison. You're already Harrison. You know? And why do you need initiation? What he was doing was exactly what Hanumanji was trying to do with Ravan here. Prabhupada was inspiring George Harrison to feel his connection with Krishna as a son, as a disciple, as a student, on a very intimate level. When he did that, George Harrison actually thrived and became a much powerful devotee than, you know, what he could probably have normally become. That is expertise of a spiritual master. He tries his best to somehow or the other make a person who is powerful, influential, become connected to Krishna and doesn't come in between and try to use that power or influence. Hanumanji didn't think, if Ravan became my servant, you know, what I could have done. Hanumanji's only thought was, if Ravan becomes the servant of Lord Ram, what he could have done, right? And when Hanumanji introduced himself to Ravan, how did he introduce himself? It's very interesting, which shows again the boldness of Hanumanji as a preacher. He said, Dasoham Kaushalendrasya. He said, I am the servant of Lord Ram. Bold. Preacher means doesn't get scared. He is in the territory of Ravan, surrounded by powerful demons, all hardcore atheists. In spite of that, he is saying, I am the servant of Lord Ram. That is boldness. And more than that, he gave different words to identify who he is. Very interesting. These are the words that each one of us as students, as sadhakas, have to identify with as our eternal identity. He said, first thing, he said, Das. I'm a servant. He didn't identify himself as anything other than a servant of God. And the second thing he said, I am Ramadut. I'm the messenger of Ram. And this is preaching. When somebody identifies himself as something other than a messenger of Ram, messenger of God, he might feel that he's something influential, something powerful, something great. He has a great knowledge. But somebody who thinks that I'm a messenger can never become proud. Because messenger is a postman. From here, he takes it, gives it there. That's it. That's his role. So Hanumanji's role is very clear. I'm a messenger, but I'm an intelligent messenger. I know how to give the message properly. So Hanumanji, he gave the message of Lord Ram. Ram gave him a very, you know, simple message. But Hanumanji gave it in a very graphic way, which Ravan clearly understood. So that freedom of intelligence is there for a preacher. He can use his intelligence to preach in a way which is effective and the message penetrates. Hanumanji used it. But he didn't forget the fact that I'm a messenger. And he retained that fact. And that empowered him. And then he said, I am Vanara. Vanara means, he said, I am neither Ishwara nor a normal human being, nor a Nara. I am Vanara. The word Vanara has many meanings, but one of the meanings in this particular context is that he said, then I am not an ordinary person because I am connected to Ram, but at the same time, I am not God. I am not a superhuman. You know, he's very clear. I am a person who is connected to God. And then he also said that, you know, I am not Kamadas. I am not a servant of lust. You know, he's indicating to Ravan that you are a servant of lust, but I am not. So this is something that we can learn from Hanumanji, that when somebody, you know, takes shelter of the Lord gives you the empowerment to handle the things that come along with that. So Hanumanji was taking a risk for serving Lord Ram, just like, you know, when somebody has to preach the message of the Lord, he has to take a risk sometimes. But when somebody takes a risk under empowerment, there is protection also. Hanumanji's tail was burning, but he didn't feel the burning effect of the tail because two people were constantly protecting him. The empowerment of Lord Ram and the mercy of Mother Sita. And because these two people were constantly meditating on protecting him, Hanumanji was not affected. That's the role of somebody who is trying to spread the message of the Lord. Understanding that there is protection available. And at the same time, now Hanumanji, though he did so much, his mood was very simple. His mood was that I am not the doer. You know, it's not that he always boasted that I am doing this, I am doing that, you know. So again, you know, when it comes to, just to conclude the whole thing, prominently what we saw in this particular episode is the role of Sankarshan or Balramji as uniting families. The role of Balramji as a person who's uniting people with Krishna, playing the role of a spiritual master. and the role of Hanumanji as uniting Lord Ram and Mother Sita. And Hanumanji also united many people in the Ramayana. He united Ram with Bharat, you know, during the last episode. And he united Ram with Lakshman when Lakshman was practically on the verge of death. Both Ram and Lakshman practically were dead. Jambavan asked, I don't care if Ram and Lakshman are dead. Is Hanumanji alive? You know, Jambavan not interested in Ram and Lakshman. If Hanumanji is alive, everyone will live. That was the confidence Jambavan had in how Hanuman can play the role of uniting people together. And so the contrast in different roles is personalities like Kamsa, their role is to separate. Personalities like Shurpanaka, Manthara, their role is to separate the Lord from his consort, the Lord from his devotees. The role of personalities like Balramji is to unite. Kamsa sent Dhenukasur to separate Krishna from the devotees. Balramji sent Dhenukasur to the abode of death to unite devotees with Krishna. Kamsa sent hundreds of demons every time to disunite Krishna with the Lord. But every time Balramji was involved, instrumental in uniting Krishna with the devotees. In the pastime of Kaliya, I'll just end with this. When Krishna was in the coils of Kaliya, Balramji was standing outside. He didn't enter into the lake to fight with Kaliya. Why? Because Balramji understood the mood of Krishna. He wanted to, you know, kind of play a solo game here. So Balramji didn't. He doesn't believe in competition. You know, wherever he is needed, he comes. Wherever he is not needed, he doesn't come. And in this particular role, he played a very interesting role without entering that place. He played the role of smiling. That is the only thing he did. In the whole pastime, Balramji did only one thing. He smiled. But that one smile of Balramji connected the devotees so strongly with Krishna that they forgot all their miseries. It is explained by Vishnu Chakra Thakur that when Krishna was in the coils of Kaliya for 48 minutes, it is explained, one muhurta, Balramji was outside and all these people, the residents of Vrindavan, were suffering, practically dying. Yashoda Mai wanted to enter the Kaliya lake to help her, and she was going to die. But Balramji, he held everyone back and he didn't speak. He only smiled. And the smile of Balramji gave confidence to every devotee present there that Krishna is safe. Very soon, we'll be united with Krishna. That is the role of a spiritual master. Sankarshan, Balramji, the spiritual master, the Guru, and Hanumanji are there to unite us with Krishna, and that is the hope for us. Hare Krishna. I'm sorry, I went a little ahead. Grantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.